You know, you cannot be too Jewish.
Thank you. I couldn't possibly agree more.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Russ Linden, a professional management consultant and the author of Loss and Discovery, What the Torah Can Teach Us About Leading Change. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. Yom HaAtzmaut, Israel's 75th Independence Day, is now well in the past, and we're moving into the last couple of weeks of the counting of the Omer, the period between Passover, Pesach, the holiday of liberation, and Shavuot, the holiday of covenant and peoplehood. These 7 weeks mark the transition from spring to summer in Israel. And here in Tucson, Arizona, in the Sonoran Desert where I live, the same thing's true. That means we're headed from the lovely springtime weather of southern Arizona to the rather significantly higher temperatures of our eternally endless summer. But before we moan about the rising thermometer readings, I want to reflect on 2 great Israeli cultural figures who left the scene over the last few weeks. First, the wonderful Israeli poet, children's author, songwriter, and public critic Yonatan Geffen died last week of a heart attack at the age of 76. You know, I sang his beloved song, Hayalda Achi Yafa Began, the prettiest girl in the preschool, to my daughter Ayelet when she was born just a few months ago.
כשהיא מחייכת גם אני מחייכת וכשהיא עצובה אני לא מבינה איך אפשר להיות עצובה כשאת הילדה הכי יפה בגן לא 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 יפה בגן יש לה עיניים הכי יפות בגן וצמה הכי יפה בגן ופה הכי יפה בגן וכמה שמביטים בה יותר רואים שאין מה לדבר והיא הילדה הכי יפה יפה בגן כשהיא מחייכת גם אני מחייכת וכשהיא עצובה אני לא מבינה איך אפשר להיות עצובה כשאת הילדה הכי יפה בגן לא 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 וכמה שמביטים בה יותר רואים שאין מה לדבר והיא
Yehudit Ravitz sang that song on her recording of Hakeves HaShisha Asar, The 16th Sheep, an award-winning album of Yonatan Geffen's children's poems that was a staple of all Israeli homes for decades. And still should be. Yonatan Geffen was about as connected as you could possibly be culturally and, I guess, politically in Israel. He was the nephew of Moshe Dayan, father of pop star Aviv Geffen and filmmaker Shira Geffen, and he wrote a collection of incredibly successful songs that accompanied generations of Israelis, like Place for Concern, Yonatan Go Home, A Green Island in the Sea, Avshalom, Love Has No State, Ballad for a Naive Girl, and When You Cry, You're Not Pretty. Arik Einstein recorded that one. He translated the songs of past two Jewish guest David Broz's successful album The Woman With Me from Spanish, and wrote the songs of that album, The 16th Sheep, as well as the beloved children's book, Songs Anat Especially Likes, and One Day, That's How All the Stories Anat Especially Likes Begin. Yonatan Geffen also wrote novels, Milk Teeth and Dear Woman, and penned hundreds of critical columns for Maariv from 1972 to 2013. He was a popular, sharp commentator on the left. With several other authors, he wrote the highly critical book The Failure, After the Yom Kippur War, which let the Israeli public know just what had gone so wrong in that conflict. President Isaac Herzog said, Yonatan Geffen has passed away, and with him went from us an eternal mischievous smile of one who knew how to capture the smallest moments and the largest ones and turn them into eternal texts. He loved this country and its people. Because of that, he didn't spare them his barbed criticism. Yonatan Geffen was born in Moshav Nachalal in northern Israel in 1947. In an interview back in 2008, he said, Israel has aged terribly fast. I'm the same age as the country. I look better, don't I? It's wrong to think of Yonatan Geffen simply as a children's songwriter and author. But how can you resist a song like Chocolat about, you know, chocolate?
Mechinim chocolat bechol atzurot.
Chocolat katan vechocolat gadol chocolat yakar vechocolat bezon chocolat egozim vechocolat stam
Le'ashirim ulechulam
ve'hareach bechinam
vechol ha'ezrachim
tam 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 otzrim u'merichim.
There was another death in Israel recently, another great artist, born and raised in the same moshav as Yonatan Geffen, Nachalal in the Jezreel Valley, born about the same time. Meir Shalev, a wonderful novelist, nonfiction author, children's book writer, and gentle satirist of the founding generations of Israel, died in April at the age of 74. He was born in 1948. He was exactly the same age as Israel. Shalev, in addition to his fine novels and kids' books, was a regular and insightful political commentator, although his novels never got political, and his political commentary never pushed into his literary work. Shalev's The Blue Mountain is one of the finest Israeli novels ever written, and in every one of his books, a loving and often wicked sense of humor emerged. He has been called the Israeli Mark Twain. Meir Shalev started his career as a successful TV personality and producer, and then at the age of 40 decided he needed to do something more valuable with his life. He did. I will miss his always trenchant political columns and the novels he never got a chance to keep writing. To play us in this morning, here's David Broza, who spoke and sang at Yonatan Geffen's funeral, singing the beautiful Yieh Tov, his own setting of Geffen's poem. It'll be fine.
Ani mabit me'achalon, ze ose li deyatzu. Aviv chalaf avalo, mi yodeim yashu. Haleitzan haya lemelech, hanavini haleitzan, veshachachti et haderech. אבל אני עוד כאן ויהיה טוב, יהיה טוב, כן. לפעמים אני נשבע, אז הלילה, הלילה איתך אני נשאר. I'm לצבא ואחרי שנתיים הם חוזרים ללא תשובה אנשים חיים במתח מחפשים סיבה לנשום ואין שנאה לרצח מדברים על השלום
And it's all right It's okay Sometimes I just break down Tonight I know Tonight our love Will turn us back around
Our guest on Two Jewish this morning, Russ Linden, is a professional management consultant and the author of Loss and Discovery, What the Torah Can Teach Us About Leading Change. Find out when he joins us in a moment here on Two Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson, enterprise of the Pasquayaki tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Russ Linden is a management consultant and author. His new book is called Loss and Discovery, What the Torah Can Teach Us About Leading Change. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi. It's wonderful to be with you. How are you today?
I'm well. Russ, there are many management consultants out there. I don't know how many of them go to Shabbat morning services and Torah study and find inspiration there for the work that they do. Tell us a little bit about what led you down the current path you're taking in your work.
Great place to start, Rabbi. We have a lay-led minyan in our one congregation in Charlottesville, and we have Reform services led by a rabbi and then a traditional service led by the members. I'd like to take a turn doing the Divrei Torah over time. Maybe 15 or 20 years ago, I was having trouble coming up with an idea for the Parsha. I talked to a Torah scholar who teaches at the University of Virginia here. I said, Peter, can you give me some sages, something that Rashi said?
By the way, that's Peter Oakes, of course, a prominent biblical scholar. Go ahead.
Peter said, Russ, why would you want to do that? I said, because I'm stuck. He said, Russ, use your own Torah. I said, what do you mean, Peter? He said, you're a management consultant? Yeah. You talk about and teach leadership? Yeah. Why don't you use your leadership lens, he said, to interpret the Torah, and we'll learn from you. And frankly, Rabbi, back then, that was empowering. I didn't know that was okay. I've been using my own professional background, as well as other sources, to try to read and understand the Torah. And just finally, one of the many things I love about our history and our tradition is that, what's the phrase in Deuteronomy? Lo bashamayim hi. It's not out there. It's for us to understand and make useful in our times. So I hope that responds to your question.
So in the interest of full disclosure, Dan Alexander, the retired rabbi of Charlottesville, is an old friend of mine, and I know Lee Bysel well. He was dean when I was in Los Angeles. So some of your rabbinic bona fides rang true for me. What's the greatest element in resistance to change, in organizations that need to change, in entities that should change? And where do you see a biblical parallel?
So it's a heavy, deep question, and it's one of the ones I've thought about. As you know, even before the Israelites were released from Egypt, Moses and his brother Aaron go to the Pharaoh. The Pharaoh says, get out of here. Who's your God? And that made things worse for the Israelites under bondage. So one reason that change can be hard, Rabbi, is that sometimes there's no early wins. There's nothing positive right away.
We will talk much more with Russ Linden about how the Torah helps us lead change and his book, Loss and Discovery. We'll come back in a moment here on Two Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this spring and summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services Friday night and Saturday morning, Youth and Adult Education Academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. That's BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and all guests in our sanctuary in person. You can also call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675 for more information. You can sign up for religious school for school-aged children or grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes experience, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everyone. In-person Friday night and Saturday morning services are also available on our Facebook page. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. Torah studies at 9 a.m. Saturday, services at 10 a.m. Friday night services with full music are at 6:30 p.m. And all of our Adult Education Academy classes and religious school classes are live and on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services in the Northwest, our great religious school and Torah Tykes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and of course all of our services in person and Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Arizona. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to KohanAward.com, KohanAward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is KohanAward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, a very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review Two Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona. Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about the, I guess, kind of the vis-a-vis, the role of Israel and the diaspora, its changing status as we are in the now the 76th year of Israel, having finished the 75th anniversary celebrations for Israel. One of the questions that we began with but never really came back to is, what's the role of the community leaders, rabbis, educators, other people in positions of influence and authority in the Jewish community, in talking about Israel and in exploring how the community feels about Israel now?
I think, Rabbi, that this is one of those really tough questions that we will frustrate your listeners by not definitively answering. I mean, I don't think there is a single good answer, because if you follow the logic of numbers, if every Jew in the diaspora made Aliyah and moved to Israel, world Jewry would be gone and would all be concentrated in one country, with all the attendant risks that that entails. And it would mean the end of, in many cases, millennia-old Jewish presences throughout not only the Mediterranean world, but the entire world. To me, that's a horrible choice. It's a Hobbesian dilemma.
It's a tragedy, really, you know, in a big way, to see the idea that only one Jewish country can exist in the world. Right. That's just
on the other hand, I would be the last person to advocate that rabbis, Jewish educators, and other influencers in the Jewish community should abandon teaching about Israel, teaching about Zionism. I mean, you know, you can't study Torah without developing a special relationship with the land of Israel.
Right.
Whether you act upon that by making Aliyah or in some other way remains to be seen. But I think this is a horrible Hobbesian choice that most of us don't really want to face. So I don't think there's an answer. I think there are many answers.
Well,
depends
but
on the individual.
Let's move it beyond just, oh, do you tell everyone to make Aliyah, to what is your level of identification with Israel? There are many Jews who live in vital Jewish communities around the world, and maybe not always such vital Jewish communities, who don't feel, oh, my Judaism expressed solely in terms of my relationship to Israel. And they shouldn't. There's so many other ways it could be expressed. So it's entirely possible to talk about Israel, to teach about Israel, to have people feel strongly and closely about Israel without feeling like the only valid expression of that is to move there.
Yes, I suppose that's true.
In this period in which, for all of the challenges that Israel constantly faces, it's a vital, powerful, strong democracy. It's not existentially threatened. I know the publicity says otherwise sometimes. Isn't it the diaspora communities that maybe need reviving now? And again, maybe that's, you know, not a resolvable question.
But what does revival mean? I mean, look, the Christian evangelicals want every Jew to move to Israel because that's a precondition for the end times.
For the rapture, yeah.
Right. So I don't think most Jews believe that. I don't think most Jews share that opinion. So the question is...
I think that's an understatement.
The question is, what do we teach our children? How do you love Israel and not at least think about or contemplate the possibility of moving there?
I think you can love Israel, enjoy being there. You may contemplate the possibility of moving there, but realize that you're more comfortable. You have a life, you have family, you have interests that matter where you live in your country of origin. So I do think that even though many of us who love Israel and have been there many times, lived there for some period of time, contemplated moving there permanently and didn't do it, still feel deeply connected to Israel, but don't feel like we betrayed our central, I don't know, essence or Jewish identity.
Well, you know, an interesting sidebar here is in the former Yugoslavia, there have been many internal wars and crises over the past 50 years. And a lot of Jews from different countries that emerged from the former Yugoslavia
sure.
moved to Israel. A surprisingly large number of those have moved back.
Yeah.
So, like, the Sarajevo Jewish community, the capital of Bosnia, is being repopulated by Bosnian Jews who lived a decade or two in Israel and are going home. So there is kind of like almost a reverse aliyah in some
yeah,
cases.
Kind of a yurida, right?
I'm not sure it's a yurida, but whatever it is,
right.
That's also a phenomenon that is often overlooked.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's a complicated question. Tom, thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Morris is interviewing for a job. The interview asks him why there is a 4-year gap on his resume. So Morris tells him, "That's when I went to Yale." The interviewer is impressed and hires him on the spot. As Morris gets up to leave, he says, "Great, thank you very much. I really need this job." You see, Yale, job, job, jail. Forget it. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and stay out of Yale. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the Seder of Bahar B'chukotai, the double portion at the end of the book of Leviticus. In these final sections of the middle book of the Torah, there are interesting oddities and lessons, both at the commencement and conclusion of each portion. Bahar begins with a statement, "God spoke to Moses at Mount Sinai," saying, a seemingly unambiguous phrase. And at the end of the opening covenantal section of B'chukotai, the Torah reiterates, "God gave all the regulations and laws contained here at Mount Sinai." Finally, B'chukotai concludes the book of Vayikra by telling us, "These are the commandments God commanded Moses for the Israelites on Mount Sinai." All well and good. These rules of holiness and personal conduct must have been commanded at Mount Sinai. Yet earlier in Leviticus, it's pretty clear that God has given most of these commandments not at Mount Sinai itself, but in the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Ohel Moed, the Tent of Meeting, as the people wander around the Sinai desert. In fact, the whole book of Leviticus is apparently given after we have left Mount Sinai and begun our journey towards the Promised Land. Clearly, as Bahar begins, the Israelites don't seem to still be at Mount Sinai at all. So what gives? The question troubles rabbinic commentators who believe the Torah never wastes a phrase or makes a mistake. Their brilliant answer teaches us a profound truth about ourselves. In the rabbinic understanding, Mount Sinai is not just a geographical location, nor a simple matter of a specific place at all. Wherever we learn and do mitzvot, whenever we complete ethical acts, do tzedakah, observe religious rituals with sanctity and meaning, when we study Torah or work to perfect the world through Tikkun Olam, wherever and whenever we strive to make the world a holier, more Jewish place, then we are standing at Mount Sinai. Almost literally, as committed Jews, we take Mount Sinai with us and bring God's very presence into the world. It's a powerful message indeed. As we conclude the book of Leviticus, focused fully on creating holiness, we learn that we can make our own lives holy, in fact, as holy as the revelation at Mount Sinai, simply by studying and living the ethics of Torah every day. May we remember to do so today. When we return in a moment, our guest this morning, Russ Linden, a professional management consultant and the author of Loss and Discovery, What the Torah Can Teach Us About Leading Change, tells us who he thinks was an effective manager of change in the Torah, and which of our patriarchs most decidedly was not. Find out when we return in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Lots of news this week from Israel. Three Palestinians were killed by Israeli army fire and four wounded in the West Bank city of Nablus last week. The IDF says two of them were responsible for last month's shooting attack in the northern West Bank, in which three members of the D family were murdered. It identified the two as Moat Masri and Hassan Katanani, both 35 years old. The third casualty, 45-year-old Ibrahim Yabir, aided Masri and Katanani in escaping the scene of the terrorist attack. Hamas confirmed the three men were among the ranks of its organization. The army said it killed the two Palestinian terrorists, Masri and Katanani, reportedly responsible for the D family killing. The IDF said over 200 soldiers took part in the raid. They used anti-tank shoulder-mounted missiles and stun grenades dropped from drones. Palestinian Health Ministry said four wounded Palestinians were evacuated to a hospital. Leo D., the father of the family of the murdered women, thanked the Israeli forces for killing the terrorists. In an interview, he stated that if the terrorists had been captured alive, he and his daughter Tali would have liked to interview them and ask why they did it, what their vision is for a better world for their children. Since they are dead, I ask the Shin Bet if it is possible to ask their families the same question. He also added that he is comforted by the fact that his wife Lucy's organs were transplanted into patients he met at Beilinson Hospital in Petah Tikva. It was a great comfort, he said. Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu commended the killings. He said, "We have come to terms with the murderers of Lucy, Maya, and Rina. Our message to those who hurt us and to those who try to hurt us, whether it takes a day, a week, or a month, be sure we will reach you." Israel's defense minister, Yoav Gallant, issued a statement saying, "As we promised Leo, the father of the family, the long arm of Israel's defense establishment will reach every terrorist." Last month's murderous terror attack in the northern West Bank included the murders of 48-year-old Lucy D., her two daughters, 16-year-old Rina and 20-year-old Maya. Lucy and her daughters were traveling in a car for the Pesach holiday in the Hamra Junction area in the northern Jordan Valley, where they had gone hiking. The father, Leo, was in a separate car just ahead. He was present as first responders provided emergency aid to his wife and daughters. An Arab passenger in a third car opened fire on the women's vehicle while another person drove. After the shooting, the car carrying the women pulled onto a shoulder. The terrorists continued shooting the women, this time from close range. The hunger strike death of a Palestinian prisoner in Israeli custody, high-ranking Islamic Jihad terrorist Khadr Adnan, began a sequence in which dozens of rockets were shot at Israeli civilians in the south of Israel. Israel responded with attacks of its own on Gaza. Islamic Jihad, an Iran-backed group designated a terror organization by the U.S., the European Union, Israel, and many other countries, was responsible. Adnan had been charged with terror offenses and was awaiting trial. Palestinians and their allies falsely claimed that Adnan was being held in administrative detention, a controversial practice in which detainees suspected of terror offenses are held without charge or trial in order to protect intelligence sources. There has been a massive onslaught against our prisoners, Riyad Mansour, the Palestinian representative at the UN, said. He was among the hundreds who have been spending a long period of time under administrative detention. He was not. Mansour was lying. But the self-inflicted death of Islamic Jihad terrorist Khadr Adnan prompted the exchange of rockets. It ended only in a ceasefire to allow his body to be shipped back to Gaza. Also in news from Israel, Housing and Construction Minister Yitzhak Goldenhoff, head of the United Torah Judaism Ultra-Orthodox Party, said Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's coalition could collapse if a law that exempts members of the ultra-Orthodox community from military service in the IDF does not pass. The remarks came as Netanyahu's ultra-Orthodox Haredi allies have turned up the heat on this divisive issue in recent days. Haredi Knesset members have leveraged the upcoming vote on the 2023-2024 state budget in late May to push for progress on the exemption law. The budget has to be passed by May 29th to prevent the Knesset's automatic dissolution, which would result in snap elections. The coalition agreement between Likud and the ultra-Orthodox Ashkenazic party, UTJ, stipulates that a basic law enshrining Torah study as a foundational value in the heritage of the Jewish people and legislation allowing for blanket exemptions from IDF service for ultra-Orthodox yeshiva students has to pass before the state budget is brought to a vote. This demand for a basic law on Torah study is designed to prevent the High Court from striking down the blanket exemptions law, as it has done on three occasions in the past, on the basis that such exemptions violate the principle of equality for all citizens, since all other Jewish men in Israel are obligated to perform military service. But Netanyahu's right-wing religious coalition is seeking to pass new legislation that will lower the age after which men are exempt from military service if they are in yeshiva and haredim from 26 years old to 21 years old. Soldiers are generally drafted at age 18. Many yeshiva students remain in religious studies programs longer than they might otherwise in order to dodge the draft by claiming academic deferments until they reach the age of final exemption. According to Netanyahu's most recent proposal back in mid-April, lowering the permanent exemption age, the government hopes to spur those Haredi men to leave the yeshiva and enter the workforce when they are younger. The current age of exemption has prevented yeshiva students from entering the workforce until after they are 26, even if they are not really interested in continuing with their Talmud studies. The IDF, the military, opposes a stark drop in the age, and analysts speculate that the sides will have to meet somewhere in the middle, perhaps. Haredi ultra-Orthodox politicians in recent days have said Netanyahu has to honor the coalition agreement or risk losing his coalition. UTJ Knesset member Moshe Roth warned last week Netanyahu would have to take concrete steps on the matter if Likud wants the ultra-Orthodox party's support on the state budget. Such measures, Roth said, would need to include the submission of a draft bill on the issue, which has yet to be even drawn up, as well as a statement on the timetable for the final passage of the law. Likud has been seeking to delay passing the law, fearing additional public pushback if it works to pass deeply unpopular yeshiva exemption legislation after losing significant support over the manner in which it has advanced the incredibly controversial judicial overhaul plan that has now been paused to allow for ongoing compromise talks with the opposition. Israeli polls show now that if an election were to be held today, Netanyahu would lose office and a centrist coalition would replace the right-wing coalition in power in Israel. And that's the news of Jews around the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Russ Linden is a management consultant, the author of 6 books for public, private, nonprofit leaders seeking change. The new book is called Loss and Discovery, What the Torah Can Teach Us About Leading Change. You said something really quite fascinating. I obviously teach a lot of Torah as well as various other aspects of Judaism. And it is always fascinating to me, not just the dramatic changes we see, this kind of transformative experience that certain people have, but the fact that most of the time, people don't change so much over the course of their stories in the arc of the Torah. Jacob wrestles with the angel, becomes Israel, but he's kind of still the same guy.
He sure is.
Are those lessons the ones in which people, or the Israelites, for example, as a nation, fail to really transform? Are those just as important as the ones where people really do change?
I couldn't have said it better. As many other people have commented over the ages, one of the reasons why the Torah is so accessible to most of us rabbis is that these are real people with the strengths and flaws that all of us have or can relate to. Jacob is one of my least favorite characters, in part because he starts with every advantage, and he has all these opportunities to change, and alas, he doesn't.
Right.
Now, I was struck by what you said, Rabbi. I know many of the sages have, in my humble opinion, kind of twisted themselves in knots, trying to show that Jacob did indeed change.
Right.
But at the end of his life, Pharaoh says, "Who are you and how old are you?" And Jacob complains, "My years have been few compared to my forefathers. It's been a sad life." There was a political candidate once who ran for office, and he came from a wealthy family. And his opponent said of this candidate, so-and-so was born on third base and thought he hit a triple.
Yeah.
Jacob, maybe this is overly critical. He had chances to change after wrestling with the angel or God. He had a chance to change after meeting his estranged brother Esau. Esau rushes to greet him. He hugs him. But what happens at the end? I know you know this, Rabbi, but many don't.
I read ahead, so yeah.
Jacob, Esau says, "Come, let's travel together." what does Jacob say? No, my people are children. They're going to go slowly. Go ahead and we'll meet you. But he never intended to meet him, and he went in the opposite direction. So on the other hand, to take a much happier example, Jacob's favorite son, Joseph, another character who was born with all the advantages and who was arrogant, let's face it, thought too much of himself, didn't think of others. He grew, Rabbi, and he grew in part, or maybe mostly, because he had very tough times, first thrown in a pit, then in prison for who knows how long. But he notices two prisoners who we can assume he had already seen, and he says, "You look distraught. What's wrong?" So here we have an instance where the self-absorbed adolescent becomes something of an adult. He notices people and he shows some curiosity. And then a little later, when the Pharaoh has dreams he can't decipher, he hears about Joseph and his ability to decipher dreams. Long story short, Joseph rushes to the Pharaoh. The Pharaoh says, "I hear you can understand dreams." Joseph, what does he say? He says, "It's not me. I'm just repeating what God has told me." So this arrogant young man has developed he's got control of his ego. He's more modest. And finally, Joseph shows, I think, remarkable growth when he meets his long-lost brothers who have come to seek food from the famine. They don't recognize him. He doesn't say that who he is, which is essentially the CEO of Egypt. And when he finally reveals himself, and Joseph's brothers are so astonished and no doubt fearful because of what they had done to him, what does Joseph say? He says, "Don't blame yourself. Don't worry. You might have meant it for bad, but God meant it for good. God has an overall plan." He's developed empathy. So we see Joseph developing into a true mensch, but Jacob, in my opinion, alas, never changes. I think we need to learn from both, absolutely. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I think that's exactly how I feel about it. So, of course, I think you're right. In teaching people how to change, you mentioned that even positive change brings loss. Are people too afraid of losing to gain?
There are two former Israelis who became famous psychologists, Kahneman and Tversky. Kahneman's still with us.
Didn't he win a Nobel Prize for his work?
Rabbi, you're a step ahead of me all the way.
Oh, sorry about that.
Listen, this is fun to meet someone who shares so many things. Briefly, he and Tversky did a lot of work on many things,
right?
And one of them was called loss aversion. Briefly, we're much more energized to avoid loss than to achieve gain. We're more energized to achieve loss, avoid loss than to achieve gain. I happen to have a colleague who is a basketball commentator on basketball games for decades. And when I ask him about some of the famous coaches, one of the things he tells me is they're driven more by fear than by hope. They're scared as hell of losing a big game. They're scared of making a call and getting blamed that the game went poorly. And I've read interviews with some athletes, high-achieving athletes, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, many people like that. And when they're asked about major moments, they often refer to moments where they lost a big game and it sticks with them as though it was yesterday. To bring it down to our level, there's research that shows that many people don't ask for a promotion or a raise, even when their colleagues are convinced that the person should get the raise or promotion. And when people are asked, "Why did you hesitate to ask?" they say, "Well, I didn't want to mess up the relationship with my boss. Or maybe I would get a no." So loss aversion. What if the change doesn't work? The way our minds are wired, not everyone, but for most people, that question weighs more heavily than, "Hey, what can we gain if it does work?" By the way, one way to deal with that is to do what a colleague of mine likes to call shrink the change. Shrink the change. Do it one small step at a time. Take a little step. It's not so hard. Do it with some people who support you, whether it's at work or changing your diet or your exercise regime. If the first step's not so hard, take another step. And so we're reducing the chances of loss and the cost of the loss.
I feel like we could go on for a really long time, but we're out of time. And one of the things that I'm pretty sure you're good at doing is managing time. Russ, where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about your book?
Well, first of all, thank you for this opportunity, Rabbi. It's been delightful and stimulating. And now that I know that we share a lot of ideas and thoughts, maybe offline, we could continue our conversation. My website is russlinden.com, russlinden.com. And the new book is featured there, as well as some other works and some consulting I do.
The book is called Loss and Discovery, What the Torah Can Teach Us About Leading Change. I think it's really valuable and has great insights. Russ, thank you so much.
It's been a real delight for me. Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Richard Michelson, poet, children's book author, and gallery owner, whose new book of poetry, Sleeping as Fast as I Can, is his most Jewish yet and quite wonderful. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush in person and on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning is for the late, great Yonatan Geffen. It's his Shir Ben Ha'arbaim, A Song at Dusk. The lyrics are by Yonatan Geffen, the melody by Shlomo Idov, a past guitarist for Arik Einstein. There's a story in this. Shlomo Idov wrote a beautiful song, but in English. Einstein told him, "It's pretty, but why in English? We aren't in the Galut anymore. That is, we're not in the diaspora. We're in Israel, write Hebrew." Idov protested that he didn't know how to write lyrics in Hebrew. So Arik Einstein said, "No problem. Call up Yonatan Geffen." Gave him the phone number. He did. Took a bus to his apartment, played the tune, and Geffen wrote these beautiful words. He sits by the river at dusk and listens to the songs of the clear water. He hears how the flowers grow and the dew falls and freezes his cheeks like pearls. People become hardened by loneliness. Few gain from it. Some are afraid of the silence. Some find a soul in it. He looks upon the sun above, and the light remains in his shut eyes, and the wind scatters its secrets. He breathes in the aroma of the fields. People become hardened by loneliness. Few gain from it. Some are afraid of the silence, but some find a soul in it. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
Who yoshev al sfat ha-nachal ben arbaim hu makshiv lekol shirei ha-mayim ha-zakim hu shomea איך פרחים צומחים והטל יורד לו וקופא עליך יד כמו פנינים מי
מרגישים מעטים יוצאים ממנה.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.